You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Remember Private First Class Jessica Lynch from Palestine, West Virginia, the 20-year-old U.S. prisoner of war who was reportedly dramatically rescued from Saddam Hospital in Al-Nasiriyah. In a pre-dawn raid, U.S. Navy SEALs and commandos stormed the hospital where she had been for 9 days, receiving treatment for wounds inflicted during an ambush of her convoy in southern Iraq. Lynch is currently recovering in Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital in Washington, D.C., where she's diagnosed with amnesia from her ordeal. Oddly enough, there appear to be two versions of her rescue. The Toronto Star foreign editor in Jerusalem, Mitch Potter, was in Iraq at the time and visited the hospital in Nasiriyah, where Lynch had been held, and discovered conflicting stories of how Lynch was treated while in the hospital. Peace Watch spoke with Potter today.
People were ravenous for every little tidbit they could possibly get, and there were lots of tidbits fed out. You know, there was reports that Jessica had fought to the death, that she'd emptied her clip, and that she'd been shot twice and stabbed once at close range. And it kind of died off after that because there was no access to Lynch. And meanwhile, in Baghdad, where a number of, there were quite a number of reporters in the immediate post-war aftermath, a number of us were getting conflicting accounts from Nasiriyah and hearing that maybe it didn't quite happen as advertised. So that's when I decided to go down and do my own kind of investigation.
Now, your story sort of differs a bit with the details that we've been hearing about what really happened. Tell us what your version of the real saving of Jessica Lynch is.
Sure. Well, what I wanted to do, because there were conflicting accounts, I thought, if anything, what I could add to it was to actually go to Nasiriyah and to seek out everybody I could possibly find that had any knowledge, any connection whatsoever to Lynch's time. So, of course, that largely involved medical staff. I spoke to three doctors at the hospital, two nurses, an administrator, and a number of local residents that had knowledge firsthand about the arrival of the special forces. And the story, I thought it was important to speak to them individually, just to see if there were any variations in what I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were small variations, but not substantial. I don't think it substantially changes what I learned down there. The upshot of it is that everybody I spoke to agreed that the Iraqi military left the hospital anywhere between 30 and 36 hours before the rescue of Lynch. And in effect, the rescue, according to the medical staff at the hospital, they basically attacked territory that they already controlled. One night before this rescue, the head resident surgeon, Dr. Husana, Harith Al-Husana, actually organized an ambulance to go to the American lines. He actually had Jessica put in an ambulance, he told me, and took her to the American lines. They got within, which was only 1 kilometer from the hospital, they got within 300 meters and they started to take gunfire. And his quote to me is, there wasn't a chance to tell them, we have Jessica, would you please take her? They had to retreat and go back to the hospital.
Hmm.
And so they tried to give her back, is what they're telling me.
And so that was Dr. Husana's version.
That's right.
And you said you spoke independently to other doctors and nurses there at the hospital. They all said the same thing?
They did. Dr. Husana and one other doctor, Dr. Mutafer Razik, they conceived this plan unto themselves to put Jessica in an ambulance. And so there was no advance knowledge by the rest of the medical staff. Now, they realized that it was happening and they witnessed it afterward. But it wasn't like the entire medical staff was in on the plan to send Jessica back to the Americans. They wanted to be fairly careful about it.
Why did Dr. Husana say why he was returning her to the Americans?
They had been protecting her the entire time, and by this point, because the Iraqi army, the military forces had already withdrawn from the hospital, they realized it was only a matter of time before the Americans arrived. And Dr. Husana thought it would be wiser and safer for all the other patients in the hospital if they voluntarily presented PFC Lynch rather than have Americans come, however they might come, they felt that it was inevitable that the Americans would be there and it would be imminent. So when they were unable to return lunch, they came back to the hospital, and there were about 40 medical staff on duty, and it's probably worth noting they'd been in the hospital about 2 weeks solid. They hadn't gone home, none of these doctors, none of these nurses. They'd been there around the clock because the fighting was fairly intense, and they had huge casualties. It's interesting to note that they're not blaming the Americans singularly for these casualties. They say that Saddam's fedayeen were as responsible, if not more so, for the casualties they were seeing, largely civilian casualties. They had about 400 people killed in the region and about 2,000 injured, and some of them were used as human shields. Some of them were actually, according to the doctors, just shot by the fedayeen. So as you can imagine, they had their hands full. It was an intense, intense time. They judged that the safest thing to do would to be try to return Jessica, pardon me, and it was impossible to do given the circumstances. So when they came back to the hospital, they said, okay, the Americans are going to be coming, so when they do, everybody go into the X-ray room and just be safe, be there, because it's the only part of the hospital with no external windows.
So is it possible that they were going to try and return Jessica in part, not to diminish their reasons, but in part to prevent the hospital from coming under attack, serious attack?
I think that was a big part of it. But there's no question in my mind from all the medical staff I spoke to that there was a real bond formed between PFC Lynch and the medical staff, particularly there was a nurse that was dedicated to Jessica's care throughout the time. And
did you interview
43
her?
43 years old. Mm-hmm. She has three daughters that are similar in age, and I spoke to her, she said that she felt so sorry for Jessica because not only was she badly hurt when she arrived, there were no gunshot wounds, by the way, but she was badly hurt. She had two compound fractures of the upper and lower body and a fairly blunt trauma to her head, which was a deep wound. She said, so she's so badly banged up, and also she's, terrified because she's in a strange country. She's never been here before. And so this nurse, Khalida Shina, went out of her way. She said, I viewed her as one of my own rather than a patient. She stayed with her. She sang her to sleep at night. And she and two of the doctors separately said that at one point, Jessica, as she was becoming more comfortable with the care she was receiving as the days passed, she said, Khalida has to come home with me. She's like my mother. I want to take her back to America. And so I'm hoping at some point we'll be able to hear from Jessica about that, because when I told the nurse Khalida Shina it had been portrayed, the kind of care she'd received in the hospital, mm-hmm. and the fact that there had been reports she'd been abused, she started to cry, and she said, you just ask Jessica what kind of care she received and she'll tell you the truth.
Well, Jessica, we're hearing, has amnesia, and so
Two days after my story ran, my editor phoned me in Baghdad and said that you're not going to believe this. But, I know it's pretty hard. It's pretty extraordinary. According to the doctors, her memory was fine inside the hospital for the 8.5 days she spent there, and she spoke a lot about. They talked about Saddam Hussein with her. She certainly expressed deep dislike for the former Iraqi president, as one might expect.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about, she had long conversations with all three doctors that I spoke to, because they all have varying degrees of English,
mm-hmm.
and they got to be friends.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that both of these accounts of the rescue of Jessica Lynch are true? Is it possible that the military doesn't even know what really happened, that the Iraqis, that the doctors were trying to turn her over? Or does your account of what you believe really happened negate the story being told by the military?
Well, I'll tell you this. There are definitely some conflicting accounts here.
For example?
The reason this rescue mission was raised in the first place was as a result of intelligence from an Iraqi citizen who says that he witnessed Jessica being abused, being slapped.
Mohammed Al-Rahif.
In the hospital. And yes, and that is absolutely staunchly denied by everybody I spoke to in the hospital. And they said to underscore the point, they gave me a whole host of examples of the kind of care that they gave Jessica that was care, extraordinary care, that they were not even able to give to Iraqi citizens who were so badly hurt.
Like what?
One example they gave me was that, a compound fracture of a femur requires a plate, a metal plate, to be, it's a fairly invasive orthopedic surgery had to be done. And they had to wait until Jessica was stabilized. It was about 6 days into her stay before they decided that her condition is well enough now that we can really deal with this terrible, terrible compound fracture. And so they only had three platinum plates for this procedure in the entire hospital. The doctors tell me there were nearly 100 Iraqi patients who would have benefited from this expensive medical device, but they dedicated one to Jessica. And they conducted orthopedic surgery, and they said it was a fantastic success. It went flawlessly. And according to their version, she now has a platinum plate in her left femur that's doing her a world of good. They tell me that 3 days after the rescue, an American military doctor came to the hospital and sought out the orthopedic surgeon who performed this operation to thank him for doing such a fantastic job. And at the time when he was received, Dr. Razak tells me that he accepted the thanks of the American doctor, and said, "Graciously, you're welcome. We were happy to do it, but you do realize you could have just knocked on the door, and we would have brought Jessica down and given her to you. There wasn't really any need for this rescue." So I guess what I'm saying is, in the fog of war, it doesn't extend to something like a piece of metal in somebody's body. Either she has metal in her body or she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be pretty good evidence of the kind of care, or they're spinning a yarn to me, one or the other. So I called Walter Reed Memorial Hospital,
mm-hmm.
Where Jessica has been all these weeks. And
Walter Reed Military
Hospital.
A
series of specific questions about the kind of care she received. And I was told that they cannot confirm that information, that information is not available to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't get an answer on whether that kind of care was extended or not.
So is it possible that the military version of what happened is just a small part of what actually happened, but because it's a less flattering version, they're not willing to talk about it?
I suppose so. I mean, quite frankly, I am not judge and jury. You weren't there. I wasn't there. We didn't witness this firsthand. The best I can do as a reporter is to go down and talk separately to as many people involved. And I certainly have a very competing version from all the interviews I did. I think the story that I got out of this is that there are no bad guys. And, you know, Hollywood films don't work very well when you don't have bad guys.
Mm.
And that's, you know, the impression we were all left with on the basis of unnamed military sources is that PSC Jessica Lynch was shot, she was stabbed, and that she was pretty badly abused inside a hospital. And the good fight was fought in impeccable way to get her out of there. Now we know 2 months later or a month and a half later, she was not shot. She was not stabbed. Even her own father confirms this. And we have to really question whether or not there was any need for a Rambo-style raid. You know, there's still a movie to be made. It doesn't diminish the fact that Special Forces acted with a lot of valor to go into a situation where they didn't know what they were going to find.
Mm-hmm.
And they went in and they got what they were after, and they came out with PFC Lynch. And that's a pretty great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of doctors who tell me that they swear by the Hippocratic Oath and they did everything they possibly could, and they consider Jessica Lynch a friend, and they hope that one day the version of the story of the kind of care she received in Iraq is told as well.
when you say Hollywood and you know, Hollywood's not interested in unless they're good guys and bad guys. Mohammed al-Rahif, who is the Iraqi attorney who claims to have provided hand-drawn maps and to the U.S. military and led them, the U.S. commandos, to Private Lynch. What role, if any, did you find that this attorney played in the rescue of Jessica Lynch?
Well, you know, he was brought under the American umbrella in Kuwait pretty quickly, as was his family. And, you know, I spoke to locals about it. They know of him. They didn't really extend to me an opinion, firmly or otherwise, on what they think of him. He's not on the scene and wasn't when I got down there. But there's no doubt in my mind, pretty much the whole town knew that she was in this hospital. Mm-hmm. It was an open secret. Everybody knew. Everybody also knew that the Iraqi military had left the hospital. It, again, was an open secret. That news traveled pretty fast. So, what hasn't traveled fast to Nasiriyah is the information about how this story has played out in the Western world.
Mm. The Delaware Bar Association has given him an award for his part in leading the U.S. Military to Private Lynch.
Right, yeah. I wasn't aware of that. There, I mean, he's been given a hero's welcome in America. I know that the U.S. Republican Representative Bob Livingston, the Livingston Group, his lobbying firm, he's taken up employment there. And you know, I made an effort to try and reach him in the United States, and I was told that he's declining all interviews. He wants to maintain a low profile. I think that the information I have calls into question his account. Mm-hmm. But there are also reports that information came from other sources. There have been some publications in Israel saying that Israeli intelligence on the ground in Iraq actually provided the Americans with some information as well.
In fact, the Israeli insider says that they gave the U.S. The information that led them to Private Lynch. And they, in that same article, they do mention Mohammed al-Rahif, but it doesn't really clarify, you know, if he was somehow connected with the Israeli intelligence. It left me wondering, is he a spy or...
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I can't give you answers on that. I don't know, and it'll be wonderful to get more information on this as it unfolds. I think that his version, as reported, and we haven't heard it directly from him, nobody has, the mysterious Mohammed al-Rahif, it's going to be extremely interesting to hear his account, and I'm given to understand he's inked a book deal now, so,
yes.
So we'll see if in due course. I think, frankly, I mean, again, there are so much competing agendas fighting out every nuance of this conflict, pre-war, during the war, and post-war. And, and you know, I went in there in good conscience and tried to go a little deeper and advance the story by talking to many people. I think I brought some voices forward that hadn't been heard from, but I don't know that we'll ever get the entire story on this. I think... The one thing that I do question is that with such a veracity, such a voracious appetite on the part of news editors everywhere when this story first broke, I think, you know, our first rule of thumb is source your material. Be very careful about unnamed sources. And a lot of information was just swallowed wholesale because it was such a great story. Mm. And I think disbelief was suspended on the part of a lot of news editors. And that, of course, becomes the myth when you have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of news reports simultaneously. It brands the story into the public's mind. Mm-hmm. And now, I don't think it matters how many people dig and how many people try and get the real story on this. I don't think it'll ever change. I think it's branded, and people have accepted the version that they want to accept about what happened. And competing information at this point probably can never... it can never compete with the kind of frenzy that first locked this all in most people's minds.
It's almost as if this story, the real story of the rescue of Jessica Lynch, is a symbol of the type of reporting that has been done by and large around this invasion. perhaps not this egregious in every instance, but certainly it's an indication that there's been a lot of wholesale swallowing of information without proper verification of sources.
Yeah, and it's a fine line, isn't it? I mean, you know, there were a lot of Americans in the field and a lot of lives at risk, and it's a brutal decision for every individual news editor to make a judgment on that. Okay, how far do we push? Where do we push? Where does the line of patriotism end and the line of journalism begin? You know, we're a Canadian-based publication. I work for the Toronto Star of Canada, but, you know, America's our closest neighbor and ally and always has been in my lifetime. So I want to be very careful about what I report and particularly try and avoid unnamed sources. So I can't get inside the mind of everybody I interviewed, but I can use all their names, and I have. I really encourage any American publications who really went crazy on this story in the first place. I think they're duty-bound to go back and get the real story or at least verify the information they first reported, because all those people have names and faces, and I managed to talk to them, so they're there. You can talk to them. You can get more of this story. It's available.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to see that. I'd like to see more people go deeper into this.
It does, however, according to the Washington Post, Mohammed's left eye was injured when his car came under fire from U.S. and British forces while he was making one of these alleged secret trips to supply the military with the hand-drawn maps that was, you know, designed to lead them to Private Lynch. It does sound as if the right hand had no idea what the left hand was doing, which makes your version of the facts highly plausible.
Well, yeah, and I have to tell you, two of the three doctors I spoke to by this point had a bit of an inkling of how this story had played out. And, you know, they made the point that the raiding party, the Special Forces team, came in with two videographers and one still photographer to record the whole thing, and they felt that it was an exercise in propaganda. However, Dr. Razek, who received the thank you from the American surgeon 3 days after the rescue, he doesn't think that it was an exercise in propaganda. He said that when he realized this American surgeon had no idea that Jessica was available for the taking and that there was no need for a rescue because they were trying to give her back, he told me that the surgeon was absolutely dumbfounded. He was stunned. And Dr. Razek said to me, he said, at that point I realized that this wasn't some kind of propaganda job on the part of the American military. It's just such a huge organization, such a huge undertaking that probably, his very words, he said, right hand and left hand probably don't know what they're doing, in this instance anyway.
Mm. And this all transpired on April Fool's Day.
It did, yeah. I'll leave that to you.
Mitch Potter, foreign editor for the Toronto Star in Jerusalem.
We spent 6 months in Kuwait prior to crossing the border. We trained every single day in Kuwait, and my intent was to make these soldiers battle hard.
He just wants to show that freedom has come to the Iraqi people, that they are liberated, and that the U.S. is there to help them, and that Saddam is over.
Well, I think American people need to know what type of military that they have.
Thank you, Mr. Bush.
The game is over.
Saddam Hussein is now taking his rightful place alongside Hitler, Stalin, Lenin, Trotsky in the pantheon of failed, brutal dictators.
Thank you, Mr. Bush.
Bombs over Baghdad. Bombs over Baghdad.
Bombs over Baghdad. Dancers of death. Murder in the air. With the next breath. Some are more than ready, some aren't willing.
Volunt-
That musical mix, including Native American John Trudell's Bombs Over Baghdad, was produced by Peter Beauchene, host of All Mixed Up on Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Happy birthday, Scott. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. And our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Otto Hammett of KPFA, Benta Berklin, and T from the Pattersons taking the train to Tibet. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. Send us your feedback to PeaceWatch@Pacifica.org. You can also visit WebActive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.
He believes blind. Blind obedience is the child of mindless mind.
Militant forces will help maintain law and order. And then our military forces will lead.
Vampires, drinking blood and oil cocktails.
We will help you build a peaceful and representative government.
Their violence works. It hardly ever fails.
And then our military forces will lead.
Bombs over Baghdad.